Hello, we're going to do one big story here on Newscast today because, well, it's a big story and at the centre of it is one of our journalistic colleagues here at the BBC. And the story is this. MI5, the British Domestic Intelligence Agency, has admitted lying to British courts on three separate occasions. And this was about a story about an MI5 agent who had attacked his girlfriend. That story was uncovered by a BBC journalist, and the misleading evidence that MI5 gave was about what they'd told that journalist, and the evidence that they'd lied was, well, what they'd told that BBC journalist. So in this episode, we will be joined by my colleague Daniel De Simone, who will tell us everything that happened and the implications of what this admission from MI5 today actually means. So that's what you'll hear on this episode of Newscast. And Daniel's here now. Hello, welcome back to Newscast.
Afternoon.
Right. What a story. I think this is one of those ones where we'd benefit from kind of rather than doing like the exciting things that have happened in the last day or so, just go right back to the beginning. And I suppose that is the story of the person we're calling X and his partner who we're calling Beth.
Well, that's right. So X was an MI5 agent. He's a neo-Nazi, a right-wing extremist, misogynist, a very dangerous person. And he was in a relationship with the woman we're calling Beth. X is a foreign national. We can't say where he's from. We can't report that. And when I first met her, she described to me the abuse and coercion that she had experienced at his hands. And a part of that was that he used his role with MI5 to coerce her and abuse her. And threatened her with it and said that, you know, she couldn't do anything because of who he worked for. And she was very intimidated and scared by this. And she filmed him attacking her. She filmed him in one instant. He attacked her with a machete as she was filming him. He threatened to kill her. In another video that she filmed of him, he discussed his sort of fantasies about murdering people, bludgeoning people to death. He acknowledged that he'd almost killed her. So this is a very dangerous person. And what I did is I first began investigating him as an extremist, his involvement in extremism. That's how I ended up in contact with Beth and heard about this other part of him. What we'd eventually do is also we'd speak to another former partner of his in another country who he had also terrorised. She'd ended up in hospital, just like Beth, psychologically and physically abused. And that is who he is, and he's a very dangerous person. And what happened was that in 2021...
Well, we should just say before we go into the whole process of what happened with MI5, so an agent isn't the same as an officer who works for MI5 and kind of is an employee of the state. An agent is somebody who is recruited to give information and find things out.
So that's right. Like, if you watch Slow Horses, they're all the officers are called agents, and everyone thinks of James Bond as an MI6 agent. That's not really that isn't the correct terminology. The correct terminology is that an informant, an authorised informant, is an agent. So if you're an MI5 agent, it means you're an informant. That you're not an employee of MI5, but you are working for them, and you are paid, and you are authorised. And what they do is they will task you, and they will task you to do things on their behalf, and then you provide them with information. So
they are allowed to break the law sometimes.
Men to break the law, but there are circumstances where that does happen. The argument is that in order to fit in, they're going to have to behave in certain ways. I think with the issue with X is that he was using his position to coerce and abuse a woman in private. That wasn't part of his cover. That was something he was doing in private. And if you think of all the police cases we're all very familiar with where police officers are found to have abused their position, this is a similar situation. X, on my evidence, was a genuine extremist. It wasn't something he was putting on. And things that he was saying and doing were beyond what he should have been doing as an informant. There's a line, and you're not meant to cross the line. He was going beyond that in the things he was doing.
Right, let's go back to the timeline then. So you get wind of this, you speak to the people involved, you corroborate the story to find evidence to back up what people were saying. When's your first engagement with MI5, and what are they saying to you?
Well, so what we've revealed today is that there's two bits to this. So when we sought to do the story in 2021, I wrote to them in December 2021 with saying we intended to report that X was an agent. He'd abused his position, abused partners, and obviously that raised real questions about MI5's management of him and how they'd allowed this to happen. At that point, there was a big pushback from them, and it meant that they took us to the High Court. They took me and the BBC to the High Court to try and get an injunction to ban the story, to stop it coming out. And that led to a big legal fight between us and the government. That was the then Attorney General, Suella Braverman, who brought that case on behalf of MI5. What happened in that case is that although we won the right to report the story and that the government didn't stop the story coming out, the government won on his name and identity. And so it meant that we couldn't name him or identify him. We had wanted to do that because our argument was there was a great public interest in revealing this man's identity so that women who may come into contact with him could be warned about him and be protected, because this man has a history of abusing women. He's a threat to children. He's spoken about wanting to sexually abuse children. He's threatened to kill children. He's a very dangerous person. The government argued that if we named him, that would create a risk to him. And that was unacceptable. And they convinced the judge of that, so we couldn't name him. But we broadcast a very, significant story showing videos of him with his face blurred and other things.
And what was it that was said to the High Court by somebody who worked for MI5 that has proved to be kind of so crucial now?
Well, so within that case, a senior MI5 officer, a deputy director of the organisation, gave a corporate witness statement on behalf of the organisation.
And what's a corporate witness statement?
Well, so a corporate witness is, if you like, someone who gives evidence on behalf of the organisation. So they might not be the person who has who's been directly involved in the events that they're giving evidence about, but if you like, they're the senior figure who's speaking on behalf of the organisation. So he gave evidence about MI5's view about the risk to X and other matters. And then he also gave specific evidence about things that had taken place. And one of the things he gave evidence about in his statement was he told the court, if you like, this wasn't something I said, it was their case they brought, that they had had contact with me, with the BBC, at the stage when we were originally, a much earlier stage in this saga. And that during those contacts with me, they had, MI5, had neither confirmed nor denied X's agent status. And he said in his statement that I had said I had a suspicion that he was an agent, but that they had, in response, had neither confirmed nor denied that position.
Which is normally MI5's standard kind of policy. If someone says to them, is this person an agent? They say, we can neither confirm nor deny. And it's so common, it's even got NCND. Yeah, it's even known by just four
So it's letters. A standard policy, and it's like it's seen as like a totemic policy that is used by MI5, MI6, the Special Forces, GCHQ, and it's used as a response to questions that are deemed to stray into matters that are relate to national security, and it is a stop response. Quite a lot of people think it's an unsustainable policy, that there are various problems with it, and it's used even when it shouldn't be, that it's become like a dogma. That's the view of various people, including senior police officers and others. What they said in our case was that they'd maintained that policy, and that during the contact with me they had maintained that policy. What we've revealed today is that that was untrue, that was false evidence. That actually what had happened was MI5 had called me up, not in response to a request that I'd made to them. They had called me up after I had contacted X, raising concerns about X's extremism. And they had said, we've been legally authorised. The person who called me said, I've been legally authorised to tell you this, that X is an agent for MI5. He's informing on extremist networks for us. So the story that you're proposing to do about him being extremist involved in terrorist groups is inaccurate, and so therefore is asking for it not to run. And my view was and is that he is a genuine extremist, and so he's not someone who's just putting it on. And I raised with them in those contacts that I was also aware of his violence and abuse, which wasn't something that had been in the right of reply to X when I'd contacted him. And I also told them during the contacts I'd separately heard that he was an informant. So the thing that they were telling me, I'd already heard that. That was obviously important because it was MI5 doing an authorised disclosure about this person's status, which they say they don't do. But beyond that, they then gave contrary evidence as an organisation in the High Court. And it was then repeated in at two other courts because Beth, the British victim, brought a claim against MI5 at the one court, the specialist court that is able to investigate the security service, which is something called the Investigatory Powers Tribunal. So she made a complaint to that claim. And within that, MI5 said, we never confirm nor deny agent status. We've never done it with X. And because of that, the hearing for Beth's claim should be heard in secret, effectively, apart from a bit that can be in public. But effectively, that their defence to her claim would be in secret. She wouldn't have access to it. Her lawyers wouldn't have access to it. She wouldn't know what was being said about her. She couldn't respond to it. And that is what would happen. If you play it forward, the effect of that would be she could get to the end and whether she would win or lose, and she wouldn't really know why she'd won or lost. And she appealed that decision at another bit of the High Court and was seeking a judicial review. And then MI5 was repeating its position in that. So that's three different courts in which they've given that position. What we've now revealed is that that's a false position, that they had departed from this neither confirmed nor denied policy with me. They did it in order to say that X worked for them, but also to try and say that he wasn't. Well, they said our assessment is he's not been violent, that he hasn't used a machete, and these things, which are just not true. He was violent, he did use a machete. And so that's when they departed from it, if you like, to try and cast doubt on what I found out about him. But then when they were defending a claim by his victim, they were claiming they'd stood by the policy. So I thought that was something that couldn't go on. So me and the legal team here, we spent a long time working towards a strategy where we made an application to the High Court, and I wrote to MI5 last year to let them know this is what we were planning.
Yeah, so how did you get them to say that their evidence in court initially had been wrong, and also to apologise for it? How did you do it?
So we did it with me and the legal team. We decided on a strategy, and in November, I wrote a letter to MI5 saying what we were going to say and inviting them to comment. And that said that, you know, they had departed from neither confirmed nor deny. They'd given, therefore, false evidence. And, the result was there was an organisational failing resulting in a lie to courts. That was what we said. And then the legal team at the same time wrote to the government legal department and said that we were going to be seeking a variation of the injunction to allow us to report this section of the statement that we were saying was false. In response, MI5 did something that I was quite surprised by, which was to double down on its position to say that they stood by everything that they'd said in all of everything they'd said in all of the legal proceedings about this was accurate, that there had been no departure from neither confirm nor deny. They sort of said that their evidence has been very carefully considered. So it was a kind of an aggressive, dismissive response. What we then did was to say, well, in order to put you on notice of the evidence that we're going to rely on in our application to allow this to be reported, we're going to invite you in to the BBC and we're going to let you see it and have a look at it. And also we said we're going to let you to listen to it. We didn't say what it was, but that's we kind of hinted what it might be. And so they didn't send any of their officers because they asked for it to be a secret meeting, and we said no. So they sent three lawyers, representing MI5, and me and the legal team sat on one side, they sat on the other side, went through the evidence, and the evidence was that...
In just like one of the meeting rooms we had.
In one of the BBC meeting rooms, right, okay. Yeah, it was on like a cold, wet Friday night in December, so it's quite quiet, you know what it's like Friday nights. And I then went through the evidence chronologically that we were going to rely on, which was a written note of the first call from MI5 where they said, the bloke said, I've been authorised to tell you this. This is, legally authorised to tell you that he's an agent. There was other information. I then sent him an email after that, his request, setting out the violence and concerns I had about that, which made it clear how violent this guy was, that he had paedophilic tendencies, that he was abusive, that he'd ruined people's lives. And then there's an audio recording of a 40-minute call I'd had with him the next day, where during the call, he's the guy is clearly talking about him being an agent for MI5, talking about various things to do with that, trying to cast doubt on X having been violent, saying their assessment was that he hadn't been violent, including with the machete. And so what this did is it clearly proved beyond any doubt that MI5 had not maintained a neither confirmed nor denied policy. So after that, the government and MI5 began backtracking very rapidly, to the point where the witness who'd given the original statement had to put in a new witness statement saying he now accepted that evidence was inaccurate. He says he gave that evidence believing it to be true based on the information he'd been provided with. He has MI5 and he have provided no explanation about how that happened. The evidence that I have, the BBC has, makes it plain that were a number of people in MI5 who are aware of those conversations. It was a legally authorised disclosure, according to the senior officer that called me. And so that means that organisationally there was a significant knowledge about this, about what had happened. And then MI5 have now apologised. They've said they've given an unreserved apology to three courts and to the BBC. The Home Secretary has ordered an investigation to be conducted by a former the guy who used to run the government legal department into how this evidence came to be provided, the false evidence, and to then make any recommendations necessary to ensure courts aren't misled in future. There's also a separate internal investigation by MI5 basically a disciplinary investigation. And today in court, the government's barrister said that investigation is clearly significant for the individuals involved.
Yeah, so a whole kind of slew of actions as a result of this and future news stories that we will catch up on over because there'll be developments there. Just in terms of the implications of this, I suppose there's implications in all sorts of different directions. There's the implications for just, well, how this country does national security. And it seems that national security or the processes around the national security institutions can trump, well, the truth?
Well, I think it raises a lot of questions for MI5's reliability in the courts. I mean, MI5, as they've acknowledged actually in their submissions to the court, they realise they have a particularly significant responsibility to be reliable and accurate in court, in legal proceedings. Because when they give evidence, legal authorities' judgments all make plain that judges and courts should give enormous deference and weight to what they say, to their evidence, to their assessment. They're seen as the experts, and that when they say something, courts must listen to it and effectively give deference to it, you know, unless there's a good reason not to. So when they come along and say, this is what we say happened and this is our evidence, judges are meant to take that seriously. And yet this shows that there's a real problem with that, because here they've done that. They've said, this is our evidence, this is the truth. They've doubled down on that. They've said it in three different courts. When they've been challenged, they've insisted it's all true. And they've only backtracked when played a recording showing it wasn't true. And that raises a real question about can they be relied on? And you know, they are involved in some of the most important, significant cases in the courts. We're talking about cases where people have died in attacks and MI5's been investigating the attacker before, you know, in inquests. We're talking about cases where people have had their British citizenship stripped and then maybe appealing that decision. And, you know, in a lot of these cases, particularly in the citizenship cases and other cases, these cases often go into closed session where the evidence is secret and kept secret from the person concerned and their legal teams. So, you know, the people won't even know what's being said about them. So there's a particular then responsibility for MI5 to be honest and accurate. And I think they the fact that there's a narrow review looking at what needs to change to ensure that they always are accurate, I think that's quite damaging for them.
And then there's the implication of who's the state there to protect? Is the state there to protect an agent who could help law enforcement prevent a terrorist attack, and maybe that person should be protected kind of at all costs? Or is the state there to protect the partner of that person who's under a real threat? And they might not be under threat of a terrorist attack that kills lots of people, but they're at risk too. So it's kind of where does the state's loyalty, who should they be looking after more?
Well, that's right. So this case raises all sorts of issues around the extent to which MI5 vet informants, particularly informants who are a risk of violence to partners or to women and children, and what they do in order to ensure that those informants aren't using their status and their power in an abusive way. And that's really a big issue. And that this case has raised that issue from the beginning. And the fact that Beth has brought a claim against MI5 in a specialist court has really focused attention on that issue and will focus a court's attention on that issue. What this now does, the news today and the fact that they've provided false evidence to three different courts, that raises an issue about their reliability and, you know, the extent to which MI5's evidence can be trusted. It really has raised that issue. And the other big issue that this raises is around the neither confirm nor deny policy, how sustainable that is. The government has been...
Yeah, because if an agent does a bad thing, probably for society, they should be confirming it.
Well, so, there's an agent. One of the wider issues with this is that if you think about Northern Irish cases and you think about the Troubles, there was a whole range of bad things done by state agents, murders, all sorts of terrible things happened. And that's an established thing that is the case. We had a big police investigation to possibly the most notorious state agent of the Troubles, who was codenamed Steak Knife. He was an IRA informer. And that interim report for that police investigation was published getting on for a year ago. And the police officer who conducted that recommended that there needs to be a review ordered by the government into neither confirm nor deny policy, which he said has become like a dogma. And it's like with the qualities of a stone wall. And was really saying there needs to be a reassessment of this, because that agent, Steak Knife, who everyone knows was a guy called Freddie Scapatici, who's now dead. And yet the report wasn't allowed to say that, because the government still won't confirm nor deny whether Scapatici was Steak Knife. Mm. And yet everyone knows it, and yet a report into murders and really, really very serious crimes and whether the state colluded in that couldn't name him. And so that's how much it stuck to it open. What we've actually shown today is that when I was investigating one of their agents and then they were seeking to throw me off the scent to stop me investigating it, they dropped neither confirmed or deny. And in order to try and have me not investigating one of their agents.
When
it suited them.
Do we know how Beth is getting on now? How's she faring?
So I'm in contact with Beth. She is obviously... traumatized by what happened. You know, it's still having an effect on her. I think the fact that the case is still ongoing means it's still there as a traumatic issue. She's very frustrated by the fact that MI5 are trying to keep the evidence secret from her in the case that she's brought. This new evidence today means that court is going to have to consider the issue afresh. It's going to have to consider whether MI5 can neither confirm nor deny X's status. Because the position has clearly changed, because we now know that they departed from it. They accept they departed from it. And so I think that issue is going to be considered afresh by her in her case.
And then just finally, just to ask how you've got on through all of this. And I know you won't want to make it all about you, but I mean, you are at the centre of it. And I'm just thinking, like, what you've been through is a million miles away from what I do every day, which is sit in a studio and just chat to my mates about the news, really. Was there a moment for you where it just felt either incredibly strange or really scary or very pressurized? Just the moment that sort of symbolizes this whole thing?
I mean, it's in the end, it's much more difficult for Beth and the people who've been women who've been abused. I haven't found it easy because that I'm sort of in the story in a way that I wouldn't normally be. I mean, MI5's false evidence was about me and about things that had taken place between me and them, which is an unusual thing to happen. I mean, as we've now reported today, the director general of MI5, when I was first looking to do this story about X and to say he'd abused his position as an MI5 agent and had abused his partner, the MI5 director general, Sir Ken McCallum, called up our director general, Tim Davey, and tried to cast doubt on the story, saying, it was inaccurate and as well as reckless. And that's just not true. The story was accurate. So that when you've got things like that happening to you, it is quite strange and it's not normal. But I think you just have to keep pushing on. And I know that we're in the right, that we're trying to stop this guy's abuse. We're trying to warn women about his behaviour. And we're trying to do the right thing by the two women that we interviewed, the victims of X.
Mm.
So that's the important thing. And I think the fact that we've now been able to report that they gave false evidence, they've apologised for that. That's sort of a vindication of the work. But it has been going on for a few years, and it is a weird situation to be in.
And in terms of what the deputy director of MI5, known as Witness A, has said in a statement today, they said that the false information, quote, reflected my honestly held belief at that time and which accurately reflected the information I was given. So that's what we've heard from so-called Witness A from MI5 today.